This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is CoronaCast, a podcast all about the coronavirus. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan. It's Thursday, 3rd of September.
So over the months of the pandemic, Norman, we've got lots and lots of questions about COVID and kids and babies and pregnancies. Let's talk about pregnancy today because there's a new study out in the British Medical Journal that deals with this. What effect does COVID-19 have on pregnant women?
So they've reviewed quite a lot of studies between December and the end of June with all sorts of techniques involved in the studies, 77 studies, tens of thousands of women followed through. And bottom line here is that overall the risk is low, but there is an increased chance of having a preterm baby. And I don't want to get too technical about the statistics, but there's a wide variation in the statistics here suggesting that it may not be that big a risk, but there is a risk of preterm delivery. Pregnant women compared to non-pregnant women seem to have fewer symptoms, particularly when it comes to fever and cough. But if they do get sick, they get more sick than non-pregnant women, which is actually a bit similar to influenza in some ways. And the risk of developing serious illness is similar to non-pregnant people with COVID-19, and that is that the more medical problems you've got, the more likely you are to get seriously ill, particularly to do with being overweight.
Are those the only risks that mothers face?
There doesn't seem to be any other sign of maternal complications other than having a preterm birth, and if you actually have other complications and getting serious COVID-19 disease. But in terms of pregnancy itself, no particular serious outcomes there.
Does this study look at the any effects on babies?
Well, apart from the regular risks with preterm births, there did not seem to be any increase in stillbirths or neonatal deaths. In other words, the risk to babies was negligible, if indeed it was there at all, which tends to go along with the early findings as well, that preterm is the major risk to neonates, and the risk of that is significantly greater, but not hugely so. And when you look at other outcomes in the babies over the first, just before birth and just after birth, it didn't seem to be any change.
So for people who are maybe thinking of trying for a baby this year or they found out that they're pregnant, what does this study tell us or tell them?
So it tells pregnant women that they need to be careful. You don't want to catch COVID-19 during pregnancy just in case you develop more serious disease, particularly if you've got other complications. That symptoms are not necessarily a good sign of whether or not you're going to develop serious COVID-19 disease, but you are a bit more likely than a non-pregnant woman to develop it, particularly if you're older and you have a higher body mass index, and also other comorbidities such as diabetes and so on. Those all increase your risk. So the bottom line is just be careful and really keep yourself to yourself, I think, during pregnancy so you're minimizing your risk.
So definitely something to be cautious about, but not necessarily a reason to avoid it.
No, you just don't know how long this pandemic is going to continue without a vaccine being available. So if you're planning to have a baby, and maybe being in isolation or relative lockdown is a good time to actually think about getting pregnant, then do so. Just you've got to be very, very careful. The risks here are not so high that you would say absolutely not. Their risks are modest, but they're there, which means in the absence of a vaccine, you've just got to be careful. You keep socially isolated, wear masks, and don't mix in big gatherings.
So yesterday, Norman, we were talking about whether Australia should rethink the way it isolates COVID positive cases, and you put forward a bold suggestion that perhaps they should be put into a separate facility being isolated away from the home. And we got a lot of responses about that. And thank you, CoronaCasters, as always, for your large number of responses and a really broad variety of attitudes coming through as well. Some people were worried that this kind of a response would maybe put vulnerable people at risk, or they were worried about their kids, which I do remember raising myself at the time. Some people agreed with it, thought it was a great idea, but almost everyone agreed on one point, and that was that they were worried it would push down testing rates. Like, even if the facility that we were putting people in was a 5-star hotel, that it's probably still a deterrent for coming forward and getting tested.
Yes, I did try and push the Corona Resort idea, but it didn't seem to sway an awful lot of people.
No matter how many palm trees you got there, Norman, people still don't want to be separated from their families.
So I think then, given that CoronaCasters are a typical cross-section of the Australian population, I think that idea is probably dead, sadly. I'm overwhelmed by Corona Casser's almost unanimous view, whether pro or against, that it would be bad for testing. If it would be bad for testing, then I think that would kill the idea.
But there is some research into people's behaviour around quarantine that's sort of come out recently as well. What sort of insights does that give us?
Well, they're using behaviour, it's a group from the University of New South Wales, and they're using what's known from behavioural economics. In other words, what are the things in the environment or in our attitudes or in our what's called heuristic thinking, in other words, the way we quickly come to conclusions that affect our behaviour and the decisions that we make. And they've had a look at the behavioural aspects of quarantine and how to make it better. And what they've found at a very high level is, and some of it's really pretty much common sense, is that the more you know about the COVID-19 virus, the more you know about the disease, the more you know about how to prevent it, the more likely you are to adhere to quarantine and that it makes sense. And then there are other things which can actually make it easier, such as having a plan. So knowing how you're going to actually deal with quarantine when you go into it. Are you going to watch Netflix? Are you going to you've got a certain number of movies. How are you going to Zoom or Skype with your friends and family? So you actually have a routine and you know what you're going to do in there, and you have a sense of that. There are things like that. They note about 9 different things that you could do that would make quarantine a much easier prospect for you. And then there's things that authorities can do, which would be having the ducks lined up when you go into quarantine, which I think a lot of jurisdictions do, is that when you go in, it's explained to you what's going to happen, it's food and there's support available and so on and so forth. And that does help as well.
Well, let's take a couple of questions from the audience quickly. And I really want to read out Mark's question because he begins, "I have a Tegan Taylor and Norman Swan shrine in the corner of my office. Mark, I want pics of your shrine, please." But Mark's question is, a friend of his is monitoring her resting heart rate carefully each day because she says that COVID-19 can show up prior to other symptoms days earlier by an increase in the resting heart rate. Is there any basis of fact in this?
Look, in general, resting heart rate does go up when you have an infection, no question about that. You need to know what your heart rate was beforehand to know that it's gone up. And you've got to be really careful that it's truly a resting heart rate, which means that you've got to be sitting for quite a bit of time with no agitation in a fairly peaceful environment. Usually what people say you should do is that you measure your heart rate when you wake up in the morning before you get out of bed. And then the question is, well, what's significant? If it's 60 when you wake up, is it a significant increase? If it's 70? That's not entirely clear, but if you know what your resting heart rate is and it's like 60 every day and it goes to 70, then it could mean that you're sickening for something, but not necessarily COVID-19.
So, I mean, if someone's got a slightly raised heart rate or a slightly raised temperature, that's maybe not enough to have a test. Your GP or your tester might not think that that's a good enough idea to have a test, but definitely a good idea to keep an eye on your own symptoms and to maybe self-isolate.
I think that a slightly raised temperature is good enough to have a test, and I doubt that any testing station will send you away if you do that. They might send you away if you say you're entirely symptomatic and just worried about it. I personally think that's wrong. They should test you, but I think if you've got any mild symptom at all, there's very few testing stations in Australia that will turn you away.
It's interesting you say that, Norman, because we have had comments from people in Victoria who are frustrated because they've been turned away from testing stations. Not sure what the backstory is there, but there do seem to be people who want tests who aren't getting them.
Which I think is, you really need to get to the bottom of those, because you don't want any restrictions at all on testing. If people are willing to come forward and testing and knowing that they've got to be isolated before they get the results, that means they're highly motivated and we should be testing them.
And a question from Hyo-Wan, what percentage of the population needs to be vaccinated before the government can lift all COVID-19 restrictions? Assuming we've got a vaccine, I suppose.
Well, it depends on the effectiveness of the vaccine. So it's not a straightforward answer. It's likely that the first vaccines that come out are not 100% effective. So if you've got a vaccine that's 50% effective and 70% of the population have it, then only 35% of the population is covered, which is not enough for herd immunity, sadly. So it depends on how effective the vaccine is. So if you've got a 60% effective vaccine and say 90-odd% of the population get covered, then that's pretty good. If you had one which was say covering 35% of the population, then you would probably need to maintain some kind of social distancing. But you may find with a little bit of social distancing and 35% coverage, you're in pretty good shape.
So it really depends on the vaccine coverage, and we won't know that until we have one that's approved for use.
Yep, and it's been studied in tens of thousands of people.
Well, that's all for Coronacast today.
And we love your questions, and they're what prompt the discussion on the show. So if you want to send in a question or a comment, go to our website, abc.net.au/coronacast, and click Ask a Question. Mention Coronacast so we can find it. And I think we'll close the book on Corona Resorts for the time being. But anything you want to comment on, apart from that, leave a comment.
Particularly if you also have a shrine to us in the corner of your office. And also don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can, because we really do love reading them.
And we're not egomaniacs.
Well, I am. Norman's not.
We'll see you tomorrow.
See you then.